welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Saturday, May 15th. I'm your reader, Glorietta Foley. Let's take a look at today's weather. Today we're looking at a high of 72, low of 49 on this mostly cloudy Saturday. It says mostly cloudy today. Expect 2 to 4 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 55%. A fair and drying conditions. Mostly cloudy tonight. Average relative humidity 75%. And then mostly cloudy tomorrow. Expect 2 to 4 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 55%. For your next 4-day forecast, Sunday, looking at 72 high with a low of 52. Monday, high 72, low of 55. Tuesday, high of 72, low of 57. And Wednesday, high of 74, low of 58. So there'll be some nice warm days out there. Not too terrible. Make sure you enjoy whatever sun you can get on those days. Let's take a look at our front page stories. Center of the page, main story, Fritz. Honoring their struggles is important. Bottom of the page, don't bug out over brood X. This year's batch of prodigal cicadas won't be in Iowa. And on the side page, new mask guidelines get mixed reactions. So let's start off with Fritz. Honoring their struggles is important. Back in hometown to unveil new painting, MC Native discusses his career inspirations. For an entire decade, Mason City native and painter Charles Fritz effectively lived and breathed the story of Lewis and Clark. To mark the bicentennial of the duo's expedition across the country, Fritz painted 100 works to tell their story in a way he thought was accurate as possible. In the collection, there are pieces about encamping, hunting, trapping, and encountering Native Americans who would one day be driven from their land. In the time since that major undertaking, Fritz said that he has had more time to venture across the country as well. He's been able to capture landscapes from Alaska to Mexico in his style of painterly realism. On Tuesday evening, Fritz found himself in North Iowa to unveil a new painting entitled, quote-unquote, Teamwork, as First Citizens Bank on 4th Street, Southwest in Mason City, which features three children working together to tame an uncooperative horse. Quote, success is achieved through teamwork, and quote, Fritz told the crowd of more than 24 people gathered for the event. After the event, Fritz sat down to chat about what he's been up to in recent years, what he finds so fascinating about the subject matter he keeps returning to, and where in the area he draws inspiration from. And when asked the question, how is it being back home with a new painting to unveil? He responded, it's been a lot of fun. OJ Thompson and Marty Rudemaker and I have been working on this idea for a number of years. Once we got started on the painting, COVID hit. So it's kind of been a delay coming back and hanging it up and having this reception. Fun that it has finally happened. When asked, did the past year change anything for you creatively? He responded, the COVID life wasn't too much different from normal life because I walk from my house across the yard to the studio no matter what. That wasn't too different, but typically we travel to art shows and last year was very quiet. In that regard, I did get more work done by staying at home. When asked, what is it you find so captivating about the American West and the Great Plains? He responded, I like to paint and contemplate how human beings have adapted to their surroundings through homesteading, how Native Americans and homesteaders made a way for themselves and worked with the land, and that tenacity of the human spirit that keeps trying and putting up with hardships. It's fun for me to contemplate and paint, and I enjoy bringing that subject matter to other people who relate to it. When asked what some of that subject, is some of it heavy to contemplate? Obviously, there's a dark side to homesteading and expansion. He responded, when you think about the lives these people experienced out on the plains, no matter what race you are, you had your high points and your low points. They endured a lot of struggles, and honoring their struggles is important. And putting them out there as an example is good for us to recognize that we have a lot more grit than we think we do sometimes. When asked, what's your travel routine now when it comes to painting? He said, now I'm enjoying painting from Arizona 1 month, and the next month I do something from Montana. Sometimes it's plains, Indians, or homesteaders. Sometimes it's just mountain landscape. After having traveled that much, I have referenced studies that are 35 years old that I haven't used. So I have a lot more material to go back and draw from. When asked when you return to those, is it different or difficult to get back into that state of mind that you were initially in? He responded, generally not. The inspiration is still there. Sometimes it's more queued up than when I first got home with it. You get anxious to do it. When asked what landscape around most inspires you, either when you were growing up or any time you still come back, he said, oh, I have my paintings along with me on this trip. I always like to go along the Shell Rock River when I'm back here, the forest I used to go to when I was young. I'll go back and revisit those childhood places and do a painting. And lastly, when asked, that has to be an interesting feeling to circle back to something you had such a connection to as a kid. He responded, a lot of times those paintings have an awful lot of feeling in them, thinking back about the friends you ran with at the time. We'll continue our reading with new mask guidelines get mixed reactions. CDC announcement doesn't change city business policies. On Thursday, the Center for Disease Control and announced that those who are fully vaccinated no longer have to wear masks or maintain social distancing in most social settings. In his press conference on Thursday, President Joe Biden described the new CDC guidelines as, quote unquote, a milestone. Quote, today is a great day for Americans, end quote, Biden said. Quote, it's been made possible by the extraordinary success we have had in vaccinating so many Americans so quickly, end quote. The new guidelines have been met with both praise and criticism from those around Northern Iowa. CG Public Health Information Officer Jeremy Otto said that these new guidelines from the CDC might only muddy the waters for some. Quote, it might cause a little confusion for those who are unvaccinated, end quote, Otto said. Quote, there's no way to police this, so folks that are sick and tired of wearing a mask may decide to take advantage of this opportunity and say, hey, I'm vaccinated, when they're not, end quote. Otto also expressed concern for businesses in the area who have already struggled to enforce mask usage with the expectation that mask wearing will only decrease with the CDC announcement. One business that has concerns is Susie Q Cafe in downtown Mason City. Meg Marcos, the general manager of Susie Q Cafe, said that the restaurant has some worries about the new guidelines. Quote, we do trust the science and the professionals. However, it would be hard to judge who actually is vaccinated, end quote, Marco said. Quote, we have some family members that we live that are very high risk, and we don't want to take any risk, end quote. Because of these concerns, Susie Q will continue to enforce its mask policy. Quote, for the foreseeable future, we will be requiring masks regardless of CDC guidelines, end quote, Marco said. Another restaurant that shares that concern is State Street Deli. Owner John Nardi will also continue to require customers to wear masks. Quote, the CDC guidelines won't change anything right now, end quote, Nardi said, of his store mask requirement. Quote, and you don't know who is and who isn't vaccinated, so to be on the safe side, I'd rather have everyone put on a mask, end quote. Otto said that while the CDC has issued new guidelines, it changes little about what his office will be doing as well. Quote, here at CG Health, we are still being in big proponents of mask wearing, end quote, Otto said. Quote, so until we hear differently, we will continue to wear masks, end quote. Jennifer Becker, the public health director for Butler County, agreed that the mask mandate would change little for her county, but for much different reasons. Quote, I follow the science and the CDC, so we'll follow the rules, end quote, Becker said. Quote, mask wearing in Butler County is kind of a minimal anyway, so I don't think it's really going to change much, end quote. While Otto did express concerns, he said that there are still positives to take away from the new guidelines. Quote, what this may do is encourage those who aren't vaccinated yet, but are in the fence to do so, end quote, Otto said. Quote, we got a lot of irons in the fire as far as campaigning to get people vaccinated, end quote. While there are new CDC guidelines, residents must follow local and state mandates regarding mask usage. For those who are unvaccinated, the CDC still recommends that they continue to wear a mask and social distance. Mason City does not currently have a mask mandate in place, although masks have been required in government buildings. The state of Iowa does not have a mask mandate, but cities such as Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City have had local-level mask mandates. Following new CDC guidelines, Des Moines has lifted its mask mandate, while Cedar Rapids and Iowa City have recently modified their requirements. And in a related story to this, mask rules being sorted out, state businesses make own decisions after new CDC advice. More than a dozen states quickly embraced new federal guidelines that say fully vaccinated Americans no longer need to wear a mask indoors or out in most cases. But other states and cities and some major businesses hesitated amid doubts about whether the approach is safe or even workable. As many business owners pointed out, there is no easy way to determine who has been vaccinated and who hasn't. And the new guidelines issued Thursday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention essentially work on the honor system, leaving it up to people to do the right thing. Labor groups and others warned that employees at the stores, restaurants, and other businesses could be left exposed to the coronavirus from customers and could be forced into an unwanted role of quote-unquote vaccination police. Several major chains, including CVS, Home Depot, Macy's, and supermarket giant Kroger Company, said they are still requiring masks in stores for the time being, though some said they are reviewing their policies. Half the states had mask requirements in place for most indoor spaces when the CDC issued its recommendations amid tumbling cases and rising vaccination rates. Nearly 47% of the U.S. population has received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, and cases have dropped to their lowest level since September at an average of about 35,000 a day. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky noted in making the announcement that the vaccine has proved powerfully effective in preventing serious COVID-19 illnesses. Michigan, Nevada, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Kentucky, Washington, Maine, Vermont, Connecticut, North Carolina, Kansas, Colorado, Delaware, Virginia, and Rhode Island announced plans to fall in line with the CDC guidelines either immediately or in the coming weeks. Other states, such as California, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Hawaii, and Massachusetts, and cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul, kept mask rules in place for the time being. Our next story, don't bug out over Brood X. This year's back to periodical cicadas won't be in Iowa. National media outlets soon will be buzzing about the mass emergence of periodical cicadas in parts of the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Southeast in May. Iowans, however, will be left to wonder what the Brood X brouhaha is all about because we won't see it or hear it. It's a natural phenomenon and the first time in 17 years that Brood X will be above ground to mate, lay eggs, and die. This eastern emergence is a big deal because it will happen near major markets like Chicago, Washington, D.C., and New York. But in its emergence that most of us won't see except for through the media, end quote, said Don Lewis, professor of entomology at the Iowa State University in Ames. The only cicadas bugging eastern Iowans this year will be an annual cicada, the green or black bugs that make noise during summer's dog days from July to first frost, Lewis said. Cicadas is a large group of insects that are as big around as a thumb, about 1 inch or so long, with sucking mouth parts. There are 30,000 cicada species. Quote, they are most closely related to aphids and leafhoppers, and they have a simple life cycle, egg, nymph, and adult. It may take 3 years to complete a life cycle, end quote. You'll sometimes find a cicada exoskeleton clinking to a tree, a souvenir left behind as the nymph struggles into adulthood. The insects don't sting or bite and don't damage trees or foliage. Periodical cicadas are different. Lewis described them as, quote, unique and interesting, end quote, among insects in that they have either 13 or 17 gears, a life cycle, most commonly 17. Quote, from the time eggs are laid through the nymph stage, the immature adults do not appear until 17 years later. It's amazing because we're used to mosquitoes that have a 7-day life cycle, 10 days for a house fly, end quote. The entomologist explained, quote, there's an advantage for periodical cicadas having a mass emergence. If all of them emerge at once, predators can eat you out of existence, end quote. There are 15 regional broods, and broods emerge at different times. The last big brood in Iowa, brood 3, emerged in 2014 in a region that extends from Ledges State Park near Boone down to Des Moines River Valley all the way to Missouri. Quote, nationally, it didn't get a lot of attention. That's our biggest brood, and we'll have to wait until 2031 to hear them again, end quote. Northeast Iowa had periodical cicada emergence in 2007, slated to reappear in 2024, but surveys in 2007 also showed that periodical cicadas are mostly gone from the state. Periodicals only live in permanently undisturbed wooded areas of forest and woodland, river bottoms, and floodplains, where trees are never disturbed, end quote, Lewis said. With bulging bright red eyes, thick 1/2-inch long black bodies, and gossamer orange veined wings, periodic cicadas are striking, but more than just a pretty face. They are also loud, really loud, because where the population exists, the number of insects emerging from the ground is huge, really huge. Quote, you'll have 20,000 to 40,000 per tree, which can sometimes be around 1 million per acre in density. Mid-morning, they'll start singing, and the sound is similar to annual cicadas, but there are so many of them that the sound becomes oppressive. It comes in waves and so loud that you can actually feel it against your body, end quote. It's the male singing in search of mates, and it's a cacophony. You hear it before you see it. When you come to the area in the sunshine from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you'll see them fluttering from tree to tree, just filling the air. You stand in awe, end quote, Lewis said. It's possible to see nymphs come out of the ground and cling, white and wingless, to tree bark and shrubs as they go through their final molt, shredding their exoskeleton. Wings expand and bodies dry and harden before the adult periodical cicadas fly up to the trees. Lewis saw and heard Brood 3 emergence in 1980, 1997, and 2014 at Ledger State Park. Quote, I'm counting on one more chance to be there for an emergence in 2031. End quote. Taking a look at some stories inside the page, victory for Mason City man as attorney curbs parking ticket appeal. For Pete's sake, the parking ticket tangle a local business owner found himself in with Mason City officials has finally come undone. Last month, an attorney for Pete Kuroff filed a motion with the court to dismiss an appeal put forth by the city, which had contested a magistrate ruling in favor of Kuroff, who received a ticket last summer while parked in front of his well-known deli, Pete's Kitchen, located on 6th Street Southwest. So Kuroff fought the ticket, taking it all the way to a jury trial. Though the proceeding was ultimately heard only by a judge, Kuroff made his case, presenting evidence that included photos of vehicles parked wheels up by mail carriers and law enforcement officers who stopped at a deli to grab lunch. Judge Rolf Arlson agreed with Kuroff and cited that city's code itself allowed for vehicles to park on the boulevard if it prevented traffic disruptions. Though the code does not allow for regular parking on the boulevard, Mason City Administrator Burnett said he believed the ruling would encourage others to park over the curb, presenting a hazard to those using adjacent sidewalks. In the dismissal request, Kuroff's attorney, Andrew C. Johnston, notes that the ticket falls into the category of criminal infractions, as opposed to a ruling on the validity of city ordinance, and a not guilty verdict cannot be appealed by the prosecution, as it exposes the defendant to double jeopardy. Less than a week after the motion was filed, City Attorney Randy Nielsen withdrew the appeal. Kuroff said he was notified by a city councilman that the appeal had been dropped and his parking spot was saved. Our next story, North Star to close Charles City office. Organization says nothing changing for people it serves. For 17 years, North Star Community Services, which makes empowering people with disabilities its core mission, has maintained an office in Charles City as a base of operations for going out and about to meet clients where they are. At the end of May, that satellite office will no more, according to a release from North Star. But officials from the organization, which is headquartered in Waterloo, assert that the change will in no way be felt by those who receive assistance from the programs. Quote, it won't change a thing for the people we serve because the Supportive Living Community Program is one-on-one, end quote, Director of Donor and Public Relations Jody Mueller said. According to Mueller, if anything will change at all, it will be that people who previously dropped by the Charles City office will have to call ahead to either Mason City or New Hampton, where North Star also has locations. Heidi Berg, the assistant director for the Mason City program, said that her office will continue to take referrals, but isn't expecting much of an increased workload because of the move. Quote, we're still going to serve that area, end quote, she said. To ensure as smooth a transition as possible, Mueller said that North Star workers have been talking to clients and sending out letters to available families and guardians. Though she did later note that not everyone who North Star serves has family in the area, which part of what the organization tries to address. Quote, it just proves and provides support to people who may not have another support system, end quote, she said. Quote, it's also a person-centered program, which means the person we're serving has a say in what their goals may be, end quote. In the most recent fiscal year, Mueller said in a release that 51 people received such support from those three North Star locations. Quote, and we have room to serve more people, end quote, she said, over the phone. Per Mueller, finding and funding for North Star's not-for-profit work largely comes through home and community service-based waivers from government agencies as well as grants. A June 2020 post from the Commonwealth Fund, which makes increasing healthcare access for vulnerable communities its mission, noted that just for nonprofit community organizations, about 60% saw destabilizing effects because of the COVID-19 pandemic. In November 2020, a post from the National Council of Nonprofits stated that resources for a number of service-based organizations fell in part because government ignored, quote, their obligations to pay nonprofits that incur the costs and perform the services pursuant to those written agreements, end quote. With North Star, Mueller said that closing the Charles City office would help save some money and cut down on overlap. It just makes good business sense to be more prudent with sometimes limited resources and consolidate our programming supervision, end quote, she wrote in the release. And our next story, lawmaker rejects claim of influence on election law. A progressive advocacy group is demanding answers about the role of a Washington-based political action group that is taking credit for writing the changes to Iowa's election law earlier this year. A leaked video shows the director of Heritage Action for America saying the organization worked, quote, quietly with the Iowa state legislators, end quote, to help draft Senate File 413. Quote, Iowans deserve to know who is writing their laws, and we will immediately be filing open records requests to get to the bottom of this, end quote, said Matt Sinovic, executive director of the Progress Iowa. The bill's floor manager, Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican Wilton, rejected Sinovic's accusation that, quote, Iowa voter suppression law is part of a national effort to undermine our democracy, end quote. Kaufman, chairman of the state government committee, said Heritage, quote, had literally nothing to do with it, end quote. Quote, they had nothing to do with this. I had zero conversations, end quote, with anyone from Heritage, which is a sister organization to the Conservative Heritage Foundation think tank, said Kaufman, who was a co-author of the bill, with Senator Robbie Smith, Republican Davenport, who also denied Heritage's claim. The video was reported by Mother Jones, an investigative news organization. It quoted Jessica Anderson, executive director of Heritage for America, as saying the group, quote, did it quickly and we did it quietly, end quote. quote, we got the best practices to them, end quote, she is quoted saying, quote, we helped draft the bills, end quote. In a news release March 8th, the day lawmakers gave final approval to Senate File 413, Anderson praised its passage but took no credit for it other than to say she hoped, quote, Iowa will continue to enact reforms based on the Heritage Foundation's list of best practices, end quote. Kaufman rejected her claim that Iowa lawmakers use model legislation from Heritage. Quote, I have seen none. I have used none. I've referenced none, end quote, Kaufman said. Quote, I wouldn't think it was a bad thing if we did. We use model legislation all the time. This is not a circumstance when we did it. Not a little bit, not some, not a tiny bit, zero, end quote. According to his website, Heritage works with grassroots activists who leverage personal relationships with lawmakers to promote conservative principles. Quote, we made sure activists were calling the state legislators, getting support, showing up at their public hearings, giving testimony, end quote, Anderson said. Quote, honestly, nobody even noticed. My team looked at each other and we were like, we can't, it can't be this easy, end quote. But the Senate and the House had subcommittee meetings on the legislations where members of the public spoke. The record of the House public hearings does not show any participation by Heritage. Progress Iowa said it will file open records requests to gain access to all communication between GOP lawmakers, Governor Kim Reynolds, and Heritage, quote, so we can know the truth about their work with this shadowy group, end quote. Our next story, Iowa Dems see little progress as GOP negotiates with self on taxes. Legislative Democrats may be frozen out of end-of-session negotiations between the House, Senate, and Governor Kim Reynolds, but they're offering advice on how to make Republican plans better for Iowans. Quote, zero. We've had zero role in negotiations on Reynolds' $400 million tax relief plan that Senate Republicans are calling the, quote, path to adjournment, House Minority Leader Todd Pritchard, Democrat Charles City, said Thursday, moments before the House adjourned until Friday after a two-minute session. The Senate was in session 3 minutes before adjourning until Monday. That's unfortunate, Pritchard said, because there are parts of the GOP tax plans that some Democrats and his 41-member caucus could support with some tweaks, quote-unquote. Quote, we'd like to see some things move, things for child care, some things for renewable energy, and things like that we think the bill may be lacking, end quote, he said. Quote, we're ready, said Representative Jenner Confirst, Democrat Windsor Heights, adding that House Democrats who represent 1.3 million Iowans, quote, deserve a place at the table on their behalf, end quote. The governor's plan, Senate File 619, proposes $400 million in tax relief by eliminating the 2018 state income tax quote-unquote triggers, compressing brackets, and reducing rates. It would have the state take over mental health funding, phase out the quote-unquote backfill aid to local governments, phase out state inheritance tax, and exempt taxation on COVID-19 assistance. It also incorporates various issues dealing with housing, energy infrastructure, child care tax credits, telehealth parity, and more. Senate Republicans have given the measure committee approval, meaning the bill is eligible for floor debate. House Republicans have offered their own attempt at a compromise, but their Senate colleagues have shown no interest. Let's take a look at a few short stories here. School holds breakfast for veterans. North Iowa Christian School hosted a breakfast for area veterans on Tuesday, May 12th. Nearly 25 veterans attended, a press release from North Iowa Christian School said. Four military branches were represented at the breakfast: Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force. After the breakfast, students and veterans went to Memorial Cemetery to place flags at veterans' graves. Next, registration opened for Cannonball Day events. As Cannonball Day nears, entries for the Cannonball Kids Fun Run and the Bill Riley Talent Search are now open. Both take place on Cannonball Day, which is June 26th, at East Park in Mason City. Fun Run packets can be picked up at 9 a.m., and the race begins at 9:30 a.m. The race includes a toddler trot for 2 and 5-year-olds, and two races with half-mile and mile options for 5 and 13-year-olds. All runners will get a t-shirt, medal, healthy snack, YMCA day pass, water bottle, and a free ticket to one of the inflatables on Cannonball Day. Entry forms can be found at the YMCA, Hy-Vee stores, the Mason City Parks and Recreation Office, and City Hall. The Bill Riley Talent Search begins at 2 p.m. Sprouts ages 2 to 12 and seniors ages 13 to 21 will be able to show off their talent and compete for more than $400 in cash prizes and the chance to perform at the Iowa State Fair Talent Show. Entry forms are available at Ryman Music, North Iowa Youth Center, and City Hall. Entry forms for and more information are both available and also at www.friendsofhe457.org. Spelled out, that is www.friendsofhe457.org or by calling 641-423-5328. That'll bring us to the halfway point. Just a reminder, you are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette on IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service for the print handicapped. We are glad to have you with us. We'll continue today's reading with our obituary section. Mr. Darold Malstead. Darold Malstead, 74, of Clear Lake, passed away Tuesday, May 11th in Clear Lake. Arrangements are pending with Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 310 First Avenue, Clear Lake, at 641-357-2193, or you can visit colonialchapels.com. Next, Ms. Deborah Lee Brown. Deborah Lee Brown, 73, of Mason City, passed away Thursday, May 13th at the Mercy One Hospice Inpatient Unit. A gathering of family and friends will be held Tuesday, May 18th from 4 until 6 p.m. at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City. Interment will take place in Memorial Park Cemetery at a later date. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to your favorite charity in honor of Deborah. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory. And that concludes the reading of our obituary. So let's look at the Cerro Gordo daily COVID update. Friday, May 14th, data snapshot as of 10 a.m. 399,074 total lab confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. 5,818 total lab confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo. 5,131 total recovered in Cerro Gordo. 5,997 deaths in Iowa, 89 deaths in Cerro Gordo, 4.4% 14-day positivity rate in Cerro Gordo, 181 days to double in Cerro Gordo, a status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa, including county-level data provided by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be found at coronavirus.iowa.gov. /#currentstatus. Cerro Gordo County COVID-19 vaccination information. For up-to-date information and ways you can get vaccinated against COVID-19 in Cerro Gordo County, visit cg-health.com/topics/vaccine-information-4-0-gordo-county/. If you have questions about COVID-19 vaccines, please talk to your doctor, your community faith leader, and visit getvaccineanswers.org. For COVID-19 testing options, you have Mercy One Family Health Line at 641-428-7777, Quick Care Urgent Care Clinic at 641-450-7000, Mason City Community Health Center at 641-450-0601, Waypoint Medical at 641-357-1999, or Test Iowa at 641-832-3500. School District COVID-19 data reports show Mason City Community School District, returntolearn.masoncity-schools.org/COVID-tracker-dashboard, or you can go to Newman Catholic at newmancatholic.org/parents/online-resources/, or Clear Lake Community School District at sites.google.com/clearlakeschools.org/COVID-dashboard/. And let's take a look at our digest section to get a little bit of in-world news. House to vote on Capitol Commission. Out of Washington, the House is expected to vote next week on legislation aimed at preventing more attacks on the U.S. Capitol, seeking to establish a 9/11-style commission to study what went wrong on January 6th, while allocating $1.9 billion to address the security problems revealed by the insurrection. The top Democrat and the top Republicans on the House Homeland Security Committee on Friday unveiled their plan to form the commission after weeks of delicate negotiation. Their bill would establish an independent 10-member commission, evenly divided between the two parties. The emergency spending bill will also release Friday, a product of months of reviews about what is needed to, quote, harden, end quote, security at the Capitol after the violent mob of former President Donald Trump supporters pushed past police officers and broke through windows and doors on January 6th. Our next in brief, Palestinians flee heavy Israel fire. From Gaza City, Gaza Strip, thousands of Palestinians fled their homes Friday as Israel barraged the northern Gaza Strip with tank fire and airstrikes, killing a family of six in their house and heavily damaging neighborhoods in what is said was an operation to clear militant tunnels. As international efforts at a ceasefire stepped up, Israel appeared to be looking to inflict intensified damage on the Islamic militant group Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip and has fired rockets into Israel. Across the West Bank, Palestinians held their most widespread protest since 2017, with hundreds in at least nine towns burning trees and tires, throwing stones at Israel troops. Soldiers opening fire killed six, according to Palestinian health officials, while a seventh Palestinian was killed as he tried to stab an Israeli soldier. And then our briefly section, House GOP. Republicans vaulted Representative Elise Stefanik into the ranks of House leadership Friday, electing an ardent Donald Trump defender in hopes of claiming and calming their civil war over the deposed Representative Liz Cheney unremitting combat with the former president. Next, gas crunch. Gas shortages at the pumps have spread from the South, all but emptying stations in Washington, D.C., following a ransomware cyber attack that forced a shutdown of the nation's largest gasoline pipeline. Though the pipeline operator reportedly paid a $5 million ransom, restoring services was taking time. From Gats, Joel Greenberg, a Florida politician who emerged as a central figure in the federal investigation into Representative Matt Gaetz, has agreed to cooperate with federal investigators and admits paying an underage girl to have sex with him and other men, according to court documents filed Friday. We have a police shooting in briefs. Ohio Capital City will pay a $10 million settlement for the family of Andre Hill, a black man who was shot and killed by a white Columbus police officer in December as he emerged from a garage holding a cell phone. The Columbus City Attorney announced Friday. It's the largest such settlement in the city's history. And lastly, in the brief section, immigration. President Joe Biden planned to meet Friday with six young immigrants who benefited from the Obama-era policy that protected those brought to the U.S. illegally as children. The immigrants invited to Friday's Oval Office meeting used the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program instituted in 2010 to legalize their residency. And that will take us to our sports section. So we'll start with state track and field. Field will feature North Iowa flavor. Area state qualifiers ready for a championship run. When the three-day state meet kicks off next Thursday morning and concludes on Saturday afternoon at Drake Stadium in Des Moines, there will be plenty of North Iowa flavor. Osage has the most tentative qualified events on the girls' side with 12 of 19 in Class 2A, while St. while St. Ansgar is in one less event with 11 in Class 1A. Charles City has 9 events in 3A, Forest City 2A, Mason City 4A, and West Hancock 1A have at least 5 events. Central Springs and Northwood Kensett each are in 4 events. West Fork is in 3, while Lake Mills and Garner Hayfield Ventura both are in 2 events. Riceville is in 1 event. The boys' side is led by St. Ansgar in 11 events, including 2 events, with multiple tentative qualifiers. Charles City, Clear Lake, and Forest City each will have athletes in 9 events. 6 events is what Central Springs will be bringing to the state capital, and West Fork will have 5 events. Lake Mills is in 3 events, all relays. Hampton, Dumont, Cal, Osage, Northwood, Kensett each will participate in 2 events, while Garner, Hayfield, Ventura, West Hancock, and Rockford will have 1 event. Here's the unofficial list of area qualifiers in each event. Only 24 qualifiers are in each event spread throughout all 4 classes. Heat sheets will be released sometime next week. Places and times are based on the state qualifying meets from Thursday night. We'll continue with prep roundup. Knights golf team wins sectional. Newman Catholic best Bishop Kerrigan by 6 strokes. All season long, the Newman Catholic boys golf team has slowly improved. At the most important meet to date, the Knights were at their best. Newman Catholic placed first out of 7 teams at the Class 1A sectional meet at Spring Valley Golf Course in Livermore on Thursday. The Knights carded an 18-hole team score of 359 strokes, which beat out second-place finisher Bishop Kerrigan by 6 strokes. Northwood Kensett finished third, 387, but was able to advance to the district meet as the team because Bishop Kerrigan placed second at its home course. West Forks came in fourth with a score of 389, just missing the cut by 2 strokes. St. Ansgar was sixth with a score of 422, and West Hancock finished with seventh with a score of 517. Individually, Newman Catholic's Tim Castle was the top area finisher, although him and West Fork's Nate Axton both shot an 85. It was Castle who earned the runner-up status off a handicap hole. Atkins was still able to advance to the district meet as an individual. Cale Justleth finished fourth individually with a score of 88 for Northwood Kensett. Newman Catholic's Bennett Sunkton placed fifth within 89, while Tom Mantersnock and Owen Casey placed 7th and 8th with scores of 92 and 93, respectively. Northwood Kensett Carter Severson tied with 9th to round out the top 10. Justin Osborne led West Hancock with a score of 109, and Ryan Hackbart led St. Ansgar with a score of 97. Taking a look at girls' soccer, Mason City 7, Garner Hayfield Ventura 1. The Mason City girls soccer team kept the good times rolling on Thursday night. The Mohawks beat Garner Hayfield Ventura 7-1 to earn their 4th win in 5 games. The Mohawks scored 4 goals in the first half and tacked on 3 more in the second in the win. Quote, "For a lot of the night, it was some of the best possession and movement we've had this season," end quote, Mason City head coach Shannon Dextra said. "They put a lot of players behind the ball, and we show patience in passing that maybe hasn't been there at times. It was great to get a win and see improvement in areas that we've targeted in training." End quote. Ben Nielsen and Emma Garrett each scored 2 goals in the win for Mason City. The other 3 goals were scored by Reggie Spots, Claudia Swell, and Claire McArdle. Spots also had 3 assists. Nielsen had 1 and Garrett had 1. GHV scored on a set piece as the only goal of its night. Mason City improved to 6-7 and the Cardinals dropped to 5-6. Looking at boys soccer, Denver 10, Hampton Dumont Cal 0. The Hampton Dumont Cal boys soccer team traveled to Denver, but Will Curtis and the Cyclones were too tall of a task to be taken down. Curtis scored 7 goals and the Cyclones beat the Bulldogs 10-0. Our next story, prep track roundup, Collins Connell auto qualify in multiple events. Both Charles City standouts will return to Blue Oval. Ian Collins has a Drake Relays Championship. Kiki Connell ran a lifetime best in the 1500 at Drake. Both will be making a return trip to the Blue Oval for Charles City with a packed schedule. Collins took first in the both jumping events, was second in the 100-meter dash, and ran a leg on the runner-up 400 relay, while Connell swept the three-distance events Thursday at the Class 3A state qualifier in Independence. The Commons placed second in the boys' meet with 117 points, while the girls finished third with a total of 100.5 points. Western Dubuque claimed the team title in both genders. Connell went toe-to-toe with Waverly Shellrock's Emma Hans and defeated her three times, each one creating more separation. The UNI recruit defeated Hans by 0.03 seconds in the 3000, then took the 800 by half a second, and finally won the 1500 by over 1 second. Lydia Strout leaped 16 feet, 4.5 inches, to triumph in the long jump, while Kelly Collins, high jump, and Carly Stevenson, discus, nabbed auto spots next week with second place performances. Charles City Distance Medley Quartet was the lone relay that qualified. Collins jumped over 22 feet to win the long jump, soared 6'4" to take the high jump, and blazed a runner-up finish in the open 100 in 11.50 seconds. The Commons will send both of their hurdlers, Jeremiah Chapman, 410, and Zach Greaser, 400, to state next week. Jacob Vias was runner-up in the 800 to automatically qualify. From the 3A state qualifier in Nevada, the Clear Lake boys automatically qualified six events, four of them relays, for next week's state meet after a fourth-place finish with 94 points. Hampton Dumont Cowell totaled 52 points to place seventh. Justin Wright is guaranteed to run in three events for the Lions. The senior ran three 800s, anchoring the distant medley and 3200 relays to runner-up finishes, as well as second place finish in the open 800. The shuttle hurdle quartet of Zeke Nielsen, PJ Fogbach, Jack Crane, and Tyson Cooley broke 63 seconds for the first time to place second in 1:02.67. Austin Warnock, also on the distance medley, anchored the Lions to a second-place finish in the sprint medley relay. The lone other individual automatic qualifier was Nelson in the 400 hurdles. Jordan Severs won the 400 hurdles for the Bulldogs. On the girls' side, neither Clear Lake nor Hampton Dumont Cowell had an automatic qualifier. The Lions finished with 27 points, and the Bulldogs had 20 to finish 7th and 8th, respectively. Lydia Maas, after not finishing the 3,000, came back and placed 4th in the 1,500 for HDC with a 5-second PR of 5:26.79. Cindy Boosman was 4th in the 3,000, while Zoe Ederman, 400, and Tegan Bird, 400 hurdles, each finished 5th. For Clear Lake, Anna Fallback was 6th in the 800, and in the shot put, Elena Moody and Mariposa Coleman placed 6th and 7th, respectively. For the Class 4A state qualifier at Urbandale, only three individuals for Mason City claimed their spots at Drake Stadium next week. Christian Rodriguez was the lone winner of the night for the Mohawks, cruising to victory in the 400 hurdles, with a new season best of 55.80 seconds. It'll mark his second trip to Des Moines in as many months. Kale Hobart was second in the high jump, leaping his most consistent jump of the year at 6 feet, 1 inch, to automatically qualify. The sophomore was also third in the 100 hurdles. Mason City Shuttle Hurdle Relay ran a new season best time of 1:02.01 to place third. Its 1600 and 3200 quartets each finished 5th. The Mohawk boys finished in 6th place with 71 points in the team standings, the same placement the girls had, as they finished with 49 points. Jada Williams ran 12.91 seconds in the 100-meter dash for a runner-up finish. She also was third in the Open 200 and was on Mason City's top five finish, 400 and 1600 relays. Sophomore Rosa Monarch was third in the 100 hurdles and anchored the shuttle hurdle quartet to a third place finish. From the Class 2A state qualifier at Hudson, of the four sites that featured area teams, this one was the most busy. The Osage girls automatically sent seven events, three relays, to the state meet. It piled up 111 points to finish runner-up behind Dyke New Hartford's 152 points. Forest City 60, Central Springs 59, and Garner Hayfield Ventura 30 finished 7th through 9th. Senior hurdler Paige Kisley will be in four events next week. She won the two individual events involving hurdles, anchored the Green Devils shuttle relay to a new season best of 1 minute 8 seconds 0.13, and was the victorious sprint medley relay. Meredith Street anchored that sprint medley quartet to victory and triumph in the Open 400 as the only runner to break 1 minute. She finished third in the 100 and 200 meter dashes. Also on the sprint medley was Addison Grimm, who finished second in the 800 to qualify. Forest City sophomore Lily Nielsen anchored the distance medley and ran second on the 3200 relays to claim auto spots. She was third in the 1500 and in 5 minutes 1.06 seconds and 12 seconds lifetime best. Abigail Engel was victorious in the discus and third in the shot put. On the boys' side, Forest City automatically qualified six events for state and Central Springs since in four. The Indians were second in the team standings with 98.5 points behind Dyke New Hartford, while the Panthers placed fourth with 76 points. Osage 46.5 and Garner Hayfield Ventura 18 were 9th and 11th respectively. Joy Hagvigna triumphed in the 1600 and anchored the Forest City distance medley to victory to go along with the runner-up finish in the 3200. Elijah Weaver soared 6-4 to win the high jump. Bryce McDonald won the 2 mile and was behind Hovinga in the 1 mile for Central Springs. Its shuttle hurdle relay ran a new season best time of 1 minute 3 seconds 0.05. We'll take a quick look at today's horoscope. For Saturday, May 15th, take a look around you, draw on what's positive in your life, and look for the silver lining in any situation you face. Opportunity is within reach. All you have to do is recognize your attributes and put them to the test. Complaining and arguing are a waste of time. For our Taurus specifically, don't hesitate, ask questions, make decisions, and get things done. Put your energy into learning and networking, and opportunity will follow. It's up to you to get the ball rolling. And then we'll move on over to Dear Amy. Today's Dear Amy is titled, Lunch Ladies Serve Extra Portions of Kindness. Dear Amy, in a recent question from Upset and Embarrassed, the writer noted that fellow nurses bullied her, calling her, quote-unquote, the lunch lady. I wanted to share a story about lunch ladies who should be respected and lifted up for feeding our children with a smile. When I was in school, I was shunned for a variety of reasons by students and teachers alike. I often sat completely alone in the corner during breakfast and lunch. I was often the first to arrive at breakfast period in order to get away from home earlier. The lunch ladies always greeted me with more enthusiasm and bright smiles than anyone else. They made sure I had enough to eat, even when I had no money. Eventually, I became sort of an assistant, spending my lunch periods learning how to use the equipment and how a commercial kitchen worked. On many days, their welcome assured I came to school instead of skipping the day altogether. And I think their pseudo-mentorship shaped my life more deeply than anyone could imagine a lunch lady could. Lunch ladies should never be an insult. Mine were heroes. Signed, former lunch boy. Dear former lunch boy, this is such a moving and well-deserved tribute to some of the lesser recognized personnel at school. The lunch staff, librarians, bus drivers, band and choral teachers, janitorial staff, administrative assistants, security officers, and student teachers. I hope that every adult who works in a school environment recognizes the power of eye contact, a smile, and the recognition to a child that says, I see you. Thank you so much for this letter. I hope it is printed out and posted in cafeterias everywhere. We'll take a look at a quick recap of the weather for today. High with a 72, low of 49. It says mostly cloudy today. Expect 2 to 4 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity at 55% and fair drying conditions. Mostly cloudy tonight. Average relative humidity 75%. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Expect 2 to 4 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 55%. Sunday looks to be 72 with a high of 52. Mostly cloudy with winds southeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Monday looks to be a high of 72, low of 55. Occasional rain, east-southeast winds from 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tuesday looks to be a high of 72, low of 57. Clouds and sun pleasant with winds southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And Wednesday, showers possible with a high of 74, low of 58. East-southeast winds at 10 to 20 miles per hour. So that concludes today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Saturday, May 15th. I have been your reader, Glorietta. It has been my pleasure to read for you today on Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service for the print handicapped. Have a great day, everyone. Stay safe.